नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम 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 नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 3, Text 3, Morning of Threes. This is Vidura being receiving from Uddhava Krishna Katha. He's asked him to speak about Krishna. The circumstance is Uddhava is in a forest. He's just heard Uddhava Gita from Krishna. So can imagine his state of consciousness. And Krishna has left. And he understands he's not going to see Krishna again. And that time, Vidura, who has been on pilgrimage for 34 years, finds Uddhava in the forest. And he starts asking about Krishna, because Uddhava is the dearmost associate of Krishna. And Uddhava can't speak. His emotions are so intense, and his concentration upon Krishna, just hearing about Krishna, just hearing Krishna, he becomes absorbed literally in ecstasy. His body is trembling, his tears are streaming from his eyes, his voice is choked up, he is erupting in bhava bhakti, in the mood of separation from Krishna. Well, there's a whole series of things that happen, he describes. But then he begins remembering Krishna in describing first Krishna's pastimes in chronological order from his birth in the prison house of Kamsa. And he's doing a little, like a mini Krishna book. Chapter 3 begins with Krishna, his pastimes out of Vrindavan. So, his exchanges with Kamsa, with his mother and father, his teaching, or receiving teaching from Sandipani Muni, and his dear friend, along with his dear friend Sudama. He's just like touching on the pastimes. These are for elevated devotees. That's not us, by the way. For elevated devotees, it's stimulations of ecstatic love in Rupa Goswami's. Is it like what nectar of devotion is? It's explaining the science of bhakti. But to do so, there are pastimes of Krishna to illustrate this part of the science, that part of the science. So while it's illustrating the science of bhakti, each of the descriptions of Krishna's exchanges with his devotees, they're stimulations for ecstatic love. So one is reading nectar devotion, one is being stimulated in ecstatic love, one is being brought to the stage of bhava bhakti, cleansed and purified by hearing Krishna katha, and brought to the stage of ecstasy progressively. So Srimad Bhagavatam, many literatures are they're not intended just to be like biographical. They're intended to be stimulations of ecstatic love. It's an expression of the author, in the case of literature, or here a speaker, Uddhava or Vyas, the compiler of the Bhagavatam, way, I mean, even in the first canto, in the second canto, now here in the third canto, it's not the full detailed description of pastimes, but it's little glimpses or prompts for one who knows the Leela to just become immersed in the Leela and thought of Krishna. And that's what's happening for him. So let's see what happens for us. Text 2 is about his being trained under the care of Sandipani Muni. So chronologically, Krishna is still very young. He's 12 and a half years old. He's been residing in Mathura under the care of Vasudeva and Devaki. He wants to go to school. They want him to go to school, so he goes to school. And he learns everything in 64 days and he comes back home. Well, he does some other things. He finds the dead son of Sandipani Muni at his request and brings the dead son back to Sandipani Muni. Pretty amazing. And then says to Sandipani Muni, is there something else that you would like? And he says, to have students like you two, that's all I need. Thank you very much. And so they go back to back to Mathura. So while in Mathura, because Kamsa was killed, the wives of Kamsa, he had two wives. They were both daughters of Jarasandha. So the daughters, now with their king, their husband deceased, killed by Krishna, they went back to Jarasandha and were whining and complaining. Oh, we lost our husband, do something. Get back at Krishna. So he took a vow, I will destroy him. So 17 times Jarasandha got destroyed. Well, his entire army got destroyed. And Krishna single-handedly defeated the multiple Akshauhini divisions of soldiers and left Jarasandha standing on the battlefield alone. Told him, go home. Totally humiliated. So finally, Jarasandha put it together. I need some alliances. I need some other kings that feel like I do. So he heard about Kalyavana. So he went to go visit Kalyavana. And Kalyavana was so powerful, there was no one that he could fight with. So he was asking his ministers, who would be an equal match so I can have a good fight? They said, there's only one person. That's Krishna. Oh, great. I'll become Krishna's enemy and I'll go fight Krishna. And then Jarasandha arrived. And they made a plan. You come from the north, I'll come from the east, and we'll gang up on Krishna and beat him up. Finish him. So they agreed. And the 18th time, Jarasandha attacked from the east and Kalyavana came from the north. So the report went to Krishna in Mathura. He's still young. But the report went to Krishna, so he told Balaram, this is very serious. The whole Yadu dynasty could be at risk. You stay here. I'm going to arrange for Vishwakarma to build Dwarka. And Vishwakarma very quickly built Dwarka. Not like this building back here that took him a year. Took him a short time, very quickly, almost instantly. And then mystically, Krishna transported the members of the Yadu dynasty and put them in their residential quarters in Dwarka, and then came back to meet Kalyavana. And Krishna then ran from the battlefield like a coward, but he wasn't, it was another purpose, Ranjur. So he led Kalyavana into the cave of Muchukunda, and Muchukunda awakened when Kalyavana kicked him, thinking it was Krishna who was fatigued and just was lying there asleep. And Muchukunda cindered him, crisped him in a pile of ashes, because Muchukunda had this benediction from the demigods that after fighting for a long, long, long time, he could sleep uninterrupted, and when somebody awoke him prematurely, they would at once be burned to ashes. So Krishna, omniscient Krishna, knew that Kalyavana was finished. So Krishna then had his exchange with Muchukunda, went back to the battlefield, and defeated the entire army of Kalyavana. So then Krishna and Balaram began gathering the valuables from the dead soldiers. I wasn't going to give the details, but apparently that was part of the program. The conquering kings would then take the riches from the bodies of the dead soldiers. And as they were gathering all the, and the horses, etc., gathering all the gold and so forth, Jarasandha's army came. And when Balaram and Krishna saw Jarasandha's army came, they ran, as they had done with Kalyavana, as Krishna had done with Kalyavana. They ran, and they ran to a mountain, and they climbed up the mountain, and Jarasandha thought that Krishna was hiding in a cave in the mountain, and so he couldn't find him. Pravarshana was the name of the mountain, apparently not so far from Mathura city. So he decided he would set the whole mountain on fire. So he began a huge fire, and all the growing trees and creepers and everything, huge raging fire in the whole mountain. And what did Krishna and Balaram do? They jumped from the mountain, without a parachute, and landed safely. And Jarasandha thought, that's it, Krishna's finished. So he took his armies and went home, very proud. I have conquered Krishna. But meanwhile, Krishna hadn't been conquered. And with Balaram, he returned to Dwarka. So Dwarka has just been set up. Krishna is still quite young. And at this stage, there's some further intrigue, but the part the Bhagavatam describes is the king of Bhishmaka, who had a most qualified princess, daughter, Rukmini, wished for Rukmini to become married to Krishna. And in his whole kingdom, everyone, the ministers, the other advisors to the king, everyone was in favor of that idea. They knew that that's what the king wanted. But the son of the king, Rukmi, had a different idea. Rukmi had two very special qualities. One, he had envy towards Krishna like Shishupal. And the other was, he was a buddy. Shishupal's buddy. Birds of a feather. Locked together. So, Rukmi told his father, I am the elder brother. This is my sister. She should marry Shishupal. This is my determination. And because of the attachment that Bhishmaka had for his son, he was yielding against his desire. So Shishupal, the whole gang, Shishupal, Dantavakra, Jarasandha, all these terrible demons that Krishna advented in this world to destroy, they all came to the capital city of Bhishmaka, Kundina, to take part in this wonderful wedding. The wedding of Rukmini and Shishupal. And Rukmini had no interest at all to marry Shishupal. But what to do? Because her father has given sanction, and her brother, and everybody's there, all their royal entourage, King Bhishmaka making residential quarters for everyone, receiving everyone, all grand pomp and splendor. So Rukmini broke down crying. What to do? So she called for a very trusted messenger and sent the messenger, the Brahmana, with a letter for Krishna. You know, this Leela is summarized here. Here's what the Uddhava says. Attracted by the beauty and fortune of Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, many great princes and kings assembled to marry her. But Lord Krishna, stepping over the other hopeful candidates, carried her away as his own share, as Garuda carried away nectar. So Krishna is being compared. In this whole section, Krishna is being compared to many things. Metaphors are very common here. Because it's how do you describe Krishna? So you describe like this, like that. So Krishna isn't limited by those comparisons. It gives some indication. Krishna was like, when Putana came, Krishna was like a fire that had been covered by ashes, but the fire was still there, burning. And Putana was destroyed by that fire, Krishna. So here he's being compared to like Garuda, who snatched the pot of nectar from the demigods. So there was an incident. There's not a lot of detail about the incident, but there was an incident where the mother of Garuda, her name is Vinita, and Vinita had a sister whose name was Kadru, and Vinita and Kadru were 13 sisters who were all daughters of Daksha, who had become married to Kashyapa Muni. You know the sixth canto Bhagavatam description of all this, the 10,000 sons of Daksha and the 1,000 sons of Daksha, they all became bhaktas in Narada Muni's bhakta program, and they didn't follow their father. So Daksha became very angry and he cursed Narada. Following that, Daksha had 64 daughters. And then the daughters were distributed to different personalities, and 13 of those daughters became queens, or not queens, wives of the Brahmana Kasyapa. one of those sisters was Vinita, and Vinita gave birth to many types of birds, and one of those birds was Garuda. And Kadru gave birth to many serpents. One of those serpents was Anantashesh, and another serpent was Kaliya, and many other varieties of serpents. It's a very mystical description of evolution. It's a very different idea than Darwin. So, the circumstance is not described that I've read, but there was a circumstance where Kadru, the younger sister, was giving her older sister, Vinita, some difficulty. And it was very, very terrible difficulty, so much so that her son, Garuda, was in big anxiety about the welfare of his mother. And so he made a plan. He went to the heavenly kingdom to snatch from them some nectar. So he with his talons, he came and took a whole pot of nectar, was planning to bring it to his mother. But Indra became very angry. And Indra sent a thunderbolt to hit one of the wings of Garuda. And as an offering of respect unto Indra, Garuda's wing fell off. Prabhupada describes it. No one can harm Garuda. He's the resident of Vaikuntha, and he's a carrier of Lord Vishnu. But as a humble Vaishnava showing respect to a great personality, he agreed to have one of his wings knocked off. But he was still, he snatched, from the demigods, he snatched this pot of nectar. So Krishna is being compared here to Garuda taking the pot of nectar from the demigods, stepping over the heads of all the great assembled powerful kings, this young whippersnapper, Krishna. So, Rukmini's letter reached Krishna. The Brahmana handed the letter to Krishna. Krishna read the letter, where Rukmini was literally offering her life to Krishna, saying so many wonderful things, but among those wonderful things that she's prepared to undergo austerities for the rest of her lifetime to have Krishna as her husband. She will not marry anyone else. If circumstances force otherwise, she'll give up her life, and maybe in her next life she can have Krishna as her husband. She became totally fixed upon having Krishna as her husband. And then she informed Krishna, if you would be so kind, please rescue me from this terrible circumstance. And here's how you can do it. She's a princess. She has Kshatriya capacity. She said, it's tradition in our family. It's 3 days before the wedding. And tomorrow, the day before the wedding, it's family tradition that a girl will go to the temple of Ambika. Otherwise, I'm trapped inside and always being watched, because there's so many other princes that would want to have my hand, and they're all want to make sure that nothing will happen. And so I'll go to the temple of Ambika and I'll offer my prayers to Ambika that you please make sure that I can marry Krishna. Please make some arrangement. I don't want to marry Shishupa. So then I'll be going from the palace to the temple of Ambika. So best on the way back, after I offer my prayers, then you can come and take me away. So, hearing the letter, the brahmana left to go perform his midday duties. The brahmana didn't go back to inform Rukmini what Krishna's words were, because it was an overnight journey. There's no time to get back. So Krishna told Balaram his intention and want to marry Rukmini. Please come with me. Balaram heard that the other kings had this idea that King Bhishmaka wants Krishna to marry Rukmini. No way is that going to happen. So if Krishna comes, we're prepared. We've got all of our armies. We'll destroy him if he tries to interfere with this marriage. So hearing that, Balaram told Krishna, I'm going to bring the entire Yadu army. That's a very intriguing pre-marriage little arrangement. A whole huge war over who would marry Rukmini. So Balaram brought the whole Yadu army, and Krishna came. And when Krishna came, just as King Bhishmaka had honored all of the kings that had come, he honored Krishna and Balaram, much to the chagrin of the demoniac kings who had assembled there. So this chivalry spirit was soaring. And Rukmini, on schedule, was escorted with a number of soldiers on the day before the wedding through the public courtyard, out of the palace, through the public courtyard to the temple of Ambika, where she offered her prayers. And it's described that when she was returning, by that time it was then known by the other princes that she was returning, and her beauty, just as the verse says, attracted by the beauty and the fortune of Rukmini, because Rukmini is she's an expansion of Radharani, and otherwise she's an expansion of the goddess of fortune. So her opulence and her beauty was so stunning, was described in the Bhagavatam as the princes dropped their weapons, their jaws fell, and they fell to the ground unconscious, just stunned by the beauty of Rukmini. So beautiful, who can imagine? Just at that moment, Rukmini, through the crowd, she saw Krishna and Balaram. She had never seen Krishna before. She had given herself completely to Krishna, but she saw him. And very expertly, Krishna moved his chariot, or Daruka moved his chariot through the crowd and picked up Princess Rukmini and left, much to everyone's amazement. But they were prepared, so they sent their armies to go chasing after Krishna and Rukmini. And Rukmini is looking at Krishna saying, I'm very afraid. My father's armies and all these powerful kings, their armies are so incredibly strong. I'm very afraid. Krishna said, don't be afraid. Balaram and the Yadu army will take care of everything. It's a huge battle. All of the armies were totally devastated, smashed. And Shishupal, who hated Krishna with, like, not even just with a passion, with a madness, he hated Krishna. And the day before his wedding, his wife-to-be is taken away by Krishna. He was beside himself with grief. And Jarasandha consoled him. Jarasandha gave some transcendental knowledge. He said, I've learned the 17 times that Krishna totally humiliated me to not be attached to the outcome of the fruits of my endeavors, but to remain steadfast and determined. I've learned this over time. How to be a good demon. Control my senses and remain determined. Right now, the wheel of fortune has turned in the favor of Krishna, but it won't be for long. Your opportunity will come. You will see. Let's go back to the palace. So, consoled by his buddy Jarasandha, Shishupal returned. But when they returned, the armies had been defeated, and they returned back to Videha. Rukmini's brother couldn't take it. He was beside himself with anger. He said, I take a vow. I will get my sister, bring her back, and have her married to Shishupal, or I will give up my life. What an intense, passionate thing. And he went pursuing Krishna. You know what happened. He found Krishna and Rukmini and demanded Rukmini to return because they had yet to be married. And Krishna fought with Rukmini. And Krishna defeated Rukmini. And there is Rukmini with Krishna with his raised sword ready to finish her brother. And Rukmini pleaded on her brother's behalf, and Balaram pleaded on her brother's behalf. So Krishna relented. And he, with his sharpened sword, he cut off almost all the hair, except a few little patches of little crops of hair here and there on Rukmini's head, shaved off his mustache with his sword. Sharp sword. Someone was telling me a story about this. They were, can't remember. Somewhere at a museum where they had weapons of Kshatriya kings. So they went up to the weapon just to see how sharp the sword was, and the guard stopped them and said, "Don't do that. You cut your hand. They're sharp like razors." So Rukmini was totally humiliated and then sent away. Very similar to what happened to Jarasandha several times. Just totally humiliated. And Krishna spared his life. No, you know, what's going to happen? Is this going to want to take revenge? But still, at the request of Rukmini, he let him go. So, this is what Uddhava is remembering. Prabhupada writes, Princess Rukmini, the daughter of King Bhishmaka, was actually as attractive as fortune itself, because she was as valuable as gold, both in color and in value. Since the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the property of the Supreme Lord, Rukmini was actually meant for Lord Krishna. But Shishupal was selected as her bridegroom by Rukmini's elder brother, although King Bhishmaka wanted his daughter to be married to Krishna. Rukmini invited Krishna to take her away from the clutches of Shishupal. So when the bridegroom, Shishupal, came there with his party with a desire to marry Rukmini, Krishna all of a sudden swept her from the scene, stepping over the heads of all the princes there, just as Garuda carried away nectar from the hands of the demons. This incident will be clearly explained in the 10th canto. So this is... It's like a trailer for the release of this movie of Krishna in his pastimes outside of Vrindavan. Just by hearing Krishna's pastimes, hearing Krishna Katha, Srinvatasa Katha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Riddhyantaksto Hyubadvarani Vidhunoti Savrit Satam. The heart becomes cleansed of the coverings, the abhadras, the unwanted, inauspicious things in the heart, just by hearing Krishna Katha. And in its place, the auspicious things are awakened or restored. Just by the potency of Krishna Katha is like that. It's not like a subject matter that you learn in school, and with that subject matter that you learn in school you can, you know, learn a job of technology and get a job and make a living and make some money. It's not, you know, it's not a subject to be mastered like that. It's a subject that's to elevate the consciousness of the soul, to become attracted to Krishna, to some degree, understand the inconceivable Supreme Personality of Godhead. Any discussion? With hearing just Krishna Katha, there's not a lot of the practical application part kind of things. Yeah.
I had a question about the way we hear Krishna Katha. At the end you also said we hear Krishna Katha, we try to understand Krishna's pastimes.
I didn't say that. I said the cleansing of the heart takes place, of the abhadras, and in the course of time, through that, some understanding may come. That the from our side, it's not try to understand Krishna. It's not like that.
So, when hearing philosophy, we try to process it and try to apply it. There is some processing happening in the head, at least for me. But I'm understanding that while hearing Krishna Katha, that we try to just bring ourselves to the sound vibration.
Yeah, it's like when you're chanting, what are you trying to understand? Or when you're hearing Krishna Katha, it's just Krishna's wonderful in different ways, how he's acting. He's acting with Kalyavana in a certain way, he's acting with Jarasandha in a certain way, he's acting with Muchukunda in a certain way, according to their love for him or their ill disposition towards him. He's interacting with Rukmini, he's having loving pastimes. He's exhibiting his transcendental potencies and his attractive feature according to the disposition of the individual. He's attracting our hearts to him. Similarly, yeah.
All right, thank you for the class. This question accumulated after hearing so many classes, and the thing I want to clarify, and I want to submit to you is, Like, I have seen so many examples, like the Vasa Muni going to Ambarish Maharaj and the Sudarshan Chakra coming, and he's running for 1 year. So 1 year running from a Divyastra, like Sudarshan Chakra. So is this, like, you know, protection is coming from Ambarish Maharaj, like, who was still fasting for him. Same we see, like, with Hiranyakashipu. We don't deserve to be killed by the Lord Himself. But because of Prahlad Maharaj's protection, he got such, like, blessing from the Lord Himself. The same case we see, like, with Jarasandha, where he was 16 times not killed. And in yesterday class, like, Veerbhadra was sent to kill Daksh Prajapati, not Lord Shiva goes himself, so he don't deserve. So I was just trying to understand how the Vaishnavas, like, I mean, qualifies these demons to be blessed by the Lord themselves, and why not?
Well, the simple answer is causeless mercy. Why this one and not that one? It's causeless mercy. It's the nature of a Vaishnava, or it's the nature of the Lord to be merciful. And by some good fortune one receives that mercy. What's the qualification for an unqualified person to receive mercy? There's not a prompt or a cause of which that is an effect. It's the causeless mercy of a Vaishnava or the Lord. In several of these examples, simply because of the family relation between Prahlad and Hiranyakashipu, or the family relation between Rukmini and Rukmi, there is some goodwill or some well-wishing on the part of the elevated person to their relative who is not so elevated. And Lord Shiva, because he was married to Sati, but her father was Daksha, so Daksha got some favor. But it's not necessarily limited to or restricted to because there's some family relation. But when there is family relation, then good, you know, good fortune goes to that individual. Mm-hmm. Yes?
So Maharaj, this Uddhava was situated in the transcendental platform, and then he was feeling that pain or separation from Krishna.
Yes.
So that bring him the remembrance. So this is the transcendental platform, everything is all right, but we know that the Krishna is absolute, so he is present in his pastimes, chanting holy names. So in terms of the material concept or perspective, this seems to be a contradiction.
Yeah. But it's not. It's a mood. It's a transcendental emotion that doesn't have to stand to reason. I've covered this earlier with this whole section, but it's not. In the case of Arjuna, back to the first canto, when Arjuna was, Krishna had left. And he was coming back to tell his brother, Yudhisthira, Krishna has left. He was also unable to speak, choked up and just smashed emotionally. But somehow he managed to speak something, and as he was speaking, and speaking and speaking and speaking, and particularly when he got to the remembrance of Krishna speaking Bhagavad Gita, he realized that Krishna had made an arrangement. He felt relief. He felt Krishna had made this arrangement so that I could feel his presence by remembering his instructions. In the case of Uddhava, his spiritual elevation is even greater. And he's feeling the pain of Krishna's separation, and as he's thinking about Krishna's pastimes, he's feeling Krishna's presence. At the same time, it's amplifying the pain of Krishna's separation. It's an apparent contradiction for sure, or it's a contradiction, it appears. But it's because it's on the platform of transcendental motion, it's not subject to the material evaluation, no cause and effect evaluation. It's a mood. And because of that mood of separation, our Vaishnava teaching is, in the mood of separation, the intensity of love is increased. But as the intensity of love is increased, the sense of separation also increases. And as that sense of separation increases, the intensity of the feelings of love increase. And as the intensity, it's just an unending dynamic. And what started it principally is just seeing Vidura, who reminded Uddhava of Krishna. And then Vidura started asking about Krishna, which increased it further. And as he's going on describing, he said, and you know these things very well. Now he's sharing something with one who's also very dear and intimate with Krishna. So that's increasing it's all an orchestration of transcendental emotion to increase his feelings of love for Krishna, which increases his feelings of separation. Although the contradictory part is Krishna's present in his name, Krishna's present in his pastimes, Krishna's present in his remembrance. There's this Rupa Goswami describes that there are, within the realm of prema, there are different categories of intensity. And I forget the terms. I was discussing this with Rabindra Swarup Prabhu about 10 days ago. We were at a program together. There is an anticipation of meeting with Krishna, there's being with Krishna, and then there's this, although Krishna is present, the sense of Krishna's absence even in his presence. When the gopis are with Krishna, they're feeling very soon Krishna will leave, which intensifies their feelings. The feeling of separation intensifies the feelings of love. Feelings of love intensify the feelings of separation when one is on that platform. So in the lila that exemplifies this most nicely is the Prem Sarovar lila in Vrindavan near Varsana. Is a lake where Radha and Krishna were seated, and Radharani had a garland and there was a bumblebee, and Krishna said, Madhu Mangal, please remove this bee. You have mantras, you can get him to go away. So Madhu Mangal came back and reported, Madhu has gone. And when Rukmini, when Radharani heard Madhu is gone, she was thinking, Krishna, Madhusudana has gone. And she began uncontrollably crying, feeling separation from Krishna, who was right next to her. And Krishna tried to console her. Radharani, everything's okay, I'm right here. But she was so absorbed in that mood, she couldn't check herself. And when Krishna understood that feeling of love that she had, he began crying in separation. So it's contradictory, but it's not contradictory if, in the sense that it's a mood of love, in the feelings, in the sense of separation. And in such elevated states, it's inexplicable, or it doesn't stand to reason.
Well, the second question is regarding the Sishupal. Well, he was remembering Krishna 24 hours, but that was in the end, yes.
Yeah.
So when he was got killed, so there was a sudden awakening of love, and then the soul was merged in the body of the Krishna.
Sudden awakening of love?
Maybe the accident.
Where did you hear that one? There wasn't a sudden awakening of love. And one who has a sudden awakening of love, or any awakening of love, does not wish or receive as a result merging. The explanation about that situation is provided by Narada. After the whole ceremony was over, Yudhishthir, along with the Pandavas, were conversing with Narada, and he wanted to know, how was this possible? It's right in the Bhagavatam. How was it possible? Shishupal was so vilifying Krishna, and he achieved Sayuja Mukti. How is this possible? Great sages and tapasvis and yogis, and for lifetimes and for great austerities and effort, they tried to achieve becoming one of the supreme, and it's rare that it's achieved. And here is this nasty, vile personality, offensive personality, and he achieved that. How is it possible? And the explanation was not he had a sudden awakening of love. The explanation was that just see the power of the holy name. It was calling Krishna's name again and again, although it was in scorn. It was calling Krishna's name again and again. And he became released from all of the actions of his sinful deeds. And then when he gave up his life in Krishna's presence, he achieved that, Sayuja Mukti. And he said, so what to speak of chanting with attention, deliberately trying to connect with Krishna again. But because it was not out of love, but it was where his sins had become neutralized, he achieved that Sayuja Mukti. And that's on one level of understanding what happened. Another level is Vijaya Mukti. Transcendentally speaking, what was his next destination? The release of the curse of the Kumaras. Anything else?
I would like to submit the second part of the question that is in my mind. Like, you know, we have a very individual and unique relationship with Krishna, and its reciprocation to us is very unique. But for my clarification, I want to know how a united Vaishnava association enables us in understanding that individual relationship with Krishna.
How united international association, how Sadhu Sangha helps us realize our relationship.
Understanding and strengthening that individual relationship with Krishna.
It doesn't specifically help us realize our individual relationship with Krishna. It helps us become purified so that we can realize our individual relationship with Krishna. The individual relationship with Krishna is between you and Krishna. But that's always there. It's there at present. It's just not awakened because we're not in a purified state. So it assists us in purification. One of the ways to become purified is to associate with sadhu. And one of the ways to associate with sadhu is render service. And when one renders service to a sadhu, Krishna is pleased. And that helps to awaken our individual relationship with Krishna. So the medium of serving the Vaishnavas and associating with them, Krishna is pleased. And that way the coverings become removed and our individual relationship with Krishna becomes accessible or awakened. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.